Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, we're going to be talking about what happens when we open our mouths. This is Judges 11. So, what happens when you open your mouth? When you begin speaking, do you sound intelligent? Does it sound like you know what you're talking about? Or does it sound like you have no idea what's going on and you definitely should have kept your thoughts and ideas to yourself? Do you think about the things you are about to say before you say them? This is something we've been taught since we were little bitty. Think before you speak. Do you do that? This, for many of us, is a continuous thing to practice. For me, that's certainly the case because I talk a lot. And when you talk a lot, you have to be very careful about what you say. And sometimes it's easier than others to think about what you are going to say before you say it. And many times when we open our mouths, it's like, you should have kept your mouth shut. That was definitely not the right thing to say, or, you know, you did not sound like you knew what was going on, or, you know, you're really revealing something about how you really feel inside, those types of things. And the reason we're going to talk about that today is because the man Jephthah that we spoke about last week, that the people have chosen to be their next judge, his name means he opens. And it talks throughout this lesson about what happens when he opens his mouth. And last week, when he opened his mouth, he spoke very eloquently and very intelligently about the history of Israel. He sent messages back to the king of Ammon, and he explained the history of Israel really well to him. He went through all of the things that had happened on their journey into Israel, and it sounded like he knew exactly what he was talking about, and he expressed himself well. Now, I want to do a little caveat real quick. Whenever I said he sent message to him, when you send message, you at least have a little bit of time to think about what you're going to say. And so I've heard a lot of people say they don't like text message or email because people can't, understand whether you're joking or whether you're serious. They can't read your tone. They can't see your face. And I completely understand that. I think that's why emojis have come about, because we're trying to relay, you know, hey, I'm just joking here or whatever. And so I do understand people's reservations about that. But I have to say that every time that I have to say something that I know could be perceived in a wrong way, I like to write it down because I can censor my own speech that way. And I'm not really very censored when I'm just talking because I have not mastered the think before you speak thing very well. That's just the way it is. But when I'm writing, I can say, oh, don't say it like that. Oh, that doesn't sound good. Oh, they might take this wrong. I need to reword that. Oh, that's really not nice and not the way you need to say things, or you're not going to get the right result if you say it like that. And so I like to be able to do that. Some people don't, and I understand it, but that's just something to throw out there for those of you that might feel like me, that it might be good to censor yourself and, do something in writing whenever it's something controversial or very serious or whatever. Now, so this is what he did. He sent messengers back and he sounded great. This was wonderful. That happened last week. This week, when he opens his mouth, he really messes up. As he's going into battle, he makes a promise to God that he never should have made. And one reason we know that he should never have even entertained any kind of promise to the Lord is because right at the beginning of our passage in 11:29, it says that the Spirit of the Lord was upon Jephthah. And so if God's spirit was with him, then he was going to be victorious, and he didn't need to make any kind of bargain with God to be victorious in this battle. But he doesn't either know this or needs some sort of assurance. And so as he's going into battle, this is what he says to God. He says, if you will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the people of Ammon, then that thing shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. And we're going to talk way more about this later, but what does whatever comes out of my house mean? You know, what is he thinking there? Because only thing that really comes out of our house, maybe a dog might come out to greet us, but other than that, it's going to be a person. And so is he thinking about that? Is he thinking that this could be a person and he's still willing to sacrifice a person? Or is he thinking that it will be some sort of animal? Because the way that they lived, they might have had many animals. And maybe when he says the doors of my house, he's just thinking, you know, the area of my home when it comes through the gates or whatever. What is he talking about here? Because the wording, and we don't have, you know, the original language is difficult for us to translate. And so are we misconstruing what he's saying? But he says, whatever comes out of the doors of my house. And so what does he mean by that? What is he actually promising to God? Or is he thinking about it? That's the real question, is has he really thought this promise through? Because it does not seem that he has. Seems like he's just trying to tell God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. You know, I will sacrifice whatever if you will just, you know, deliver me in this battle. And, you know, if you're saying rhetorical sacrifice, like I will give up something that matters to me, okay. But if you're talking about giving something as a burnt offering, you're talking about killing it, right? And so what is he talking about? So this is the promise that he makes to God, though. And God does bring him victory. It says that he defeats 20 cities and then subdues the Ammonites. And so he gets them under control. He defeats enough of it for them to say, all right, we give up. We're done. We're not going to bother you anymore. And then when he gets home, this is who meets him, very tragically. This is verse 34. When Jephthah came to the house at Mizpah, there was his daughter coming out to meet him with timbrels and dancing, and she was his only child. So not only is it his child that comes out to meet him, but it's his only child. And so she's ecstatic. She's celebrating her dad's homecoming and, you know, dancing and playing music, and she's so excited to see him. And immediately, obviously, he is not excited to see her. And it says that he tears his clothes and, you know, he's just devastated. And he says, oh, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You are among those who trouble me because I gave my word to the Lord and I can't go back on it. Now, we're going to talk about whether he could and should have gone back on his word later, which, spoiler alert, yes, he should have gone back on his word. We're going to discuss that further later. But he tells his daughter what he promised God, and he says, I can't go back on it. And so now I'm going to have to offer you as a burnt offering to the Lord because I promised him if he gave me victory, I would do that, and he gave me victory. And so I have to do this. And his daughter, out of apparent respect for her father and then, you know, reverence for God's laws, believing that her father could not go back on this, she says to him, if you've given your word to the Lord, then do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, because God has avenged you from your enemies. God did what he said you asked him to do, and now you have to do what you said you would do. I get it. And so then she says, but let this thing be done for me. Let me alone for 2 months that I may go and wander on the mountains and bewail my virginity with my friends. And so he lets her do this. She goes up on the mountain and her friends are sad, presumably the most sad about the fact that she's going to die a virgin, not the fact that she's going to die, which seems very odd, right? Seems very strange that she would be more concerned about dying without kids than dying in the first place. And it says that, but that is her concern. And so she goes on this mountain and is upset about this. And then when she comes back, it says that he carried out his vow, which he had vowed, and she knew no man. And then it says that every year after that, the daughters of Israel for 4 days would mourn Jephthah's daughter. And so, first of all, my first thought when I heard this story, take Jephthah out of it for a moment, thinking about his daughter, is if she could ask that this be postponed, then first of all, why not, you know, get married and be with a man? You know, you could do that. Even if you only had 2 months, you could at least be with a man. That would, if that's your primary concern, then at least you could do that. So it's kind of odd to me that she didn't do that. I guess that that would be wrong to the man. He should not, you know, have a 2 month marriage. I don't know. And then my second thought is, if she can ask for 2 months, why not ask for a year? And, you know, get married, have a child, and then it happened. And then I think, well, obviously that would be horrible because you're killing this child's mother and, you know, leaving this man to raise the child alone. And so I guess, you know, she can't. She can't, you know, do anything except for be sad about the fact that she's going to die a virgin, I guess. But very odd, and very odd that she is so concerned about that specifically. Now, Jephthah, it would make sense for him to be specifically concerned about that because she's going to be dead. So she's not going to be worrying about anything after the fact. She should be worrying about being killed. That just is so odd to me that that's not her primary concern. But Jephthah obviously should be concerned about his daughter, but it would make sense for him to also be concerned about her virginity because his name is not going to live on now. He doesn't have any more children. And so if he kills her and she doesn't have any children, then his name dies with him. And so it would make sense for him to be concerned about this, but for her, it's so weird. And so many scholars believe that he did not kill her because her primary concern was her virginity, that instead of offering her as a sacrifice, killing her, taking her life, they took her life as she knew it. So he offered her as a perpetual virgin. That was his offering. And so he was sacrificing a grandchild. He was sacrificing his namesake. He was sacrificing that, and not that he actually killed her, because this does seem to be the primary concern. And then it says, after it says that he carried out the vow that he vowed, it said she knew no man. And so they just keep talking about how this is such a big deal. And so maybe they're saying he pronounced, you are now to be a perpetual virgin, and she abided by that. Maybe that's what they're talking about. And I would love to agree with that. That makes this story much more palatable, but I can't. Because of this offer as a burnt offering, I can't imagine that we could have such a discrepancy in our language that we wouldn't understand that that word meant burnt offering. And if you offer something as a burnt offering, I mean, what would he be burning up if he took her, you know, as a perpetual virgin? If he was, you know, he can't burn her sexuality. None of that really makes any sense. And so I can't imagine that he did not offer her as a burnt offering. That's what he promised to do. And he said, I can't break my vow. And if that were his vow, then he couldn't break it. And here's the thing too. When he made the vow, he didn't know it was going to be his daughter. He thought it could have been anything. So it could have been an animal. It could have been a person. It could have been a person that was not a virgin. Right? And so how would he be keeping his vow if he offered her as a perpetual virgin? That doesn't make any sense, because he couldn't have offered a person that wasn't a virgin as a perpetual virgin. He could not have offered an animal as a perpetual virgin. And he doesn't know who's coming out of his house when he makes this promise. And so if he's keeping the exact promise that he made to God, which it seems that he would, because why change it? Then you're just not keeping your promise. And he said, I have to keep my promise. So I wish I could agree with that. If there's somebody that can explain to me how that was the case, I would love it, but I just don't see it. And so it seems as though he did offer her as a burnt offering to the Lord. And so then the question becomes, was this right for him to do? Should he have kept this promise? Because in his mind, if he doesn't keep his promise, then he's a liar. And not only is he a liar, but he has lied to God of all people, right? And so obviously, if we're going to sin, we don't want to sin against God. And so he's thinking it would be better, I guess, to sin against my daughter than to sin against the Lord. And honestly, that makes a lot of sense, right? You don't want to sin against the Lord, but every sin is against the Lord, because God is the one that forbids us even doing harm to others. And so if we do harm to others, we are sinning against the Lord. And so if he thought at all when he made this vow, which who knows if he did, but if he thought about it at all, and he did not specify an animal, which he obviously did not, or he wouldn't be willing to sacrifice his daughter, then he had to have thought, maybe it'll be an animal, but maybe it will be a person. And sacrifice of humans was forbidden by God. God did not allow human sacrifice, much less child sacrifice. This is what the people of the other gods did. The people that worshiped Moloch, which would be the Ammonites and the Moabites, which are the people that they fought the land for in the eastern, on the eastern side of the Jordan. And so God had specifically told them, don't do the things that they do. They do abominable things. They even sacrifice their own children to Moloch. And if you were to do that, you would be just like them. Do not adopt their practices. And so God forbid human sacrifice. And so if he made a promise to do something that God had forbidden him from doing, then he would be promising to sin, which makes absolutely no sense that you should keep a promise to sin. If you told God, I promise to do this thing that you don't want me to do, then what would be the logical conclusion that God would want you to do? He would want you to repent of that. He would want you to take back the promise that you made to do the wrong thing. That's only makes sense, right? And so if he had promised to do something that was against God, which sacrifice of a human, especially a child, obviously was, then that would get him to where he could say, I should have never made that promise. He should repent of the promise instead of following through with it, because now he's adding, instead of lying, no, he's not lying against God, but what he's doing is breaking another of God's promises and harming his daughter in the process. So he's sinning against God and his family. And so this would never be acceptable. This is never something that God would have wanted. And then also, God made provisions for people who made thoughtless promises, because He knows we're human, and he's not going to hold us to something stupid that we said if it is going to do more harm to keep the promise than it is good, right? And so even though he, yes, wants us to keep our promises, and he wants us to take our vows seriously, and it is extremely serious to make a vow in God's name or to God, we also don't want to do something that is wrong. And so in Leviticus 5:4-6, God says, if a person swears, speaking thoughtlessly with his lips, to do evil or to do good, whatever it is that a man may pronounce by an oath, and he is unaware of it, then when he realizes it, then he shall be guilty in these matters. It shall be, when he is guilty in any of these matters, that he shall confess that he has sinned in this thing, and that he shall bring the trespass offering to the Lord for his sin, which he committed, a female from the flock, a lamb, or a kid of the goats, as a sin offering. So the priest can make atonement for this sin. So, when he becomes aware that this was a stupid, thoughtless oath that he makes, instead of keeping this oath, he realized it was a dumb thing to do. And so God says, when you realize that you were wrong to make the oath, that making the oath was the sin, then you repent of that and you bring an offering to atone for the sin of making that promise in the first place. And so obviously, this is what Jephthah should have done. He should have said, that was the dumbest possible thing that I could have promised you, Lord. And so I thank you so much for giving us victory today. But I cannot keep that promise because it would be wrong to do so. And so instead of keeping my promise to kill my only daughter, I am going to, you know, give you a sacrifice of an animal, and then maybe even additionally something, you know, so that he could say, you know, I am making a sacrifice, but it's not going to be the one that I told you I was going to make because that was a wrong one to promise you. And so that is what he should have done. We need to be careful, obviously, and we need to, in our minds, decide that we can't break our promise to God, because if we ever decide that we have an out, then it makes it much easier to say, oh, I'll just, you know, repent of that promise later after I get the thing that God wanted. So we obviously do not want to do this. This is a last resort if we're just completely, you know, thoughtlessly promising something that would be more damaging to keep the promise than it would be to say I was wrong in promising it instead of wrong in doing it. If I'm going to be wrong either way, because I've put myself in that situation, I'm either going to have to say I was wrong to make the promise or I was wrong to keep the promise. I would rather say I was wrong to, you know, make the promise if it means doing something so heinous as what he did. So that is the end of chapter 11. And now we're going to move to the application part of this episode. But I wanted to let you know before we did that originally I had chapter 12 in this same lesson, but it was too long. And so that is what we will do next week. It has its own set of applications in it. But it also did have a little bit to do with opening your mouth. And so as you finish the rest of this episode, you will hear a portion that says, or are you like Ephraim when he opened his mouth? And that won't make a lot of sense to why I'm saying that until you listen to next week. But it still is the same point. You will still understand exactly what I'm saying about what happens when you open your mouth, whether you listen to next week's episode or not. So I just wanted to let you know that, and then I'll let you get back to the application part of this. When you open your mouth, do you sound like Jephthah when he was giving the history lesson and sounding really smart and, you know, articulating his point well? Or do you sound like Jephthah when it's like you did not think before you spoke? Because if you would have thought about that before you said it, you would have never said it. Or when we speak, do we give ourselves away like the people of Ephraim did when they spoke the word that they didn't say in the correct manner and gave themselves away? What I mean by that is, do you give away what's really in your heart whenever you speak? I said this earlier about what happens whenever you're angry. Do you say things in the right way? Maybe you're giving away how, you know, mean you really are inside when you give voice to your thoughts and feelings when you're angry. Do you give away that darkness that you have inside of you, or the dirtiness that you have inside of you when you talk? When you begin to speak, do people see who you really are, and who you really are is not very good? If that's the case, then what do we need to do? We need to work on who we are inside, right? We need to make sure that the person inside is a good person so that when we voice who we really are, then it is a good person. We don't want to give away who we really are inside if who we are inside is not good. And so we need to work on that. And that's what it says in Matthew 12, 34 through 37. This is Jesus talking, and he says, "You're a brood of vipers. How can you, being evil, speak good things? If you're a bad person, you can't say anything good. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." So our heart, what's in our heart, overflows out of our mouths. No matter how hard we try to keep our mouths shut, eventually when we open them, if we have a lot of hate within us, if we have a lot of anger within us, if we have a lot of bitterness within us, whatever bad is within us, eventually it's going to come out of our mouths if we allow it to stay there. And so we need to uproot those things within our own hearts, get rid of them so that what we speak can be good. And so out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things. And an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you, for every idle word that a man speaks, they shall give account of it in the day of judgment. By your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. This is kind of concerning, right? You'll be held accountable for every idle word that you speak, everything that you say that is, you know, not of use to anyone. Everything that you say that is not productive, that doesn't help, that doesn't build up, that doesn't strengthen, you'll be held accountable for that. And then you'll either be justified, you'll either be deemed good, or you'll be condemned, deemed bad, deemed evil for the things that you say. And so what we do there in that situation is, it's not, our answer is don't, is not to not speak, or even really to think before we speak. Our answer is to fill ourselves with goodness so that when we speak, that is what comes out of our mouths, so that we will be justified by our words and not condemned. And then James 3, 1 through 12 says, "Let not many of you become teachers, knowing that you will receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone doesn't stumble in word, then he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." So he's like, no one's going to be perfect. You're not going to be able to keep a hold on your tongue always. And then he says, "Indeed, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they might obey us, that we can turn their whole body." We turn their whole body by controlling their mouth. "Look at ships. Although they are so large and driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires." And he said, "This is what the tongue is like. It boasts of great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles?" So just a teeny tiny fire can burn up a whole forest. It starts with little things, and it can change the course of huge things. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and can be tamed by men, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and curses. My brothers, this should not be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring can yield both salt and fresh water. So he's trying to say that, you know, if you can control your tongue, you could control your whole body. But we can't. We can't get full control of our tongues. And so we need to be just really aware. And so that again says that if we can't control our tongue, then we need to make sure that we control what is inside of us, the type of person that we are, so that whatever comes out of our mouth, it will be good instead of bad. Because the tongue is, it controls who we are. And he says, you know, you use the tongue to speak blessings and curses, and that shouldn't be so. Salt water and fresh water can't come from the same place. And he says, good and bad shouldn't both come from the same place, but they do. And so you need to, you know, try to fill your words all good so that you're not a contradictory type of person. Now, Ecclesiastes 5:1-7 says, walk prudently when you go into the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, because they don't know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. So now that we've established that we really need to work on the heart even more than the mouth, we do need to work on the mouth. We need to work on, you know, saying too much, sounding like we don't know what we're talking about, and, you know, speaking impulsively. And so I want to read you several very quick Psalms and Proverbs, and then we'll close. These are just things for you to, you know, figure out where you struggle and what verses you might need to memorize, because these are very short verses. Psalm 52:2-4, your tongue devises destruction like a sharp razor, working deceitfully. You love evil more than you love good. You love lying rather than speaking righteousness. You love all devouring words, you deceitful tongue. Psalm 140:3, they sharpen their tongues like a serpent. The poison of asps is under their lips. Psalm 141:3, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth, and keep watch over the door of my lips. That is a wonderful thing to pray. Perfect thing to memorize. God, please, you know, gatekeep my words. Proverbs 10:19-21. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongues of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for the lack of wisdom. Proverbs 13:3, he who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. Proverbs 15:1-4, a soft answer turns away wrath, and a harsh word stirs up anger. So do you want to answer softly and, you know, quash the anger, or do you want to stir it up with a word of hatred? The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. So if you're not very smart, you start talking, it's going to show. The eyes of the Lord are on every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Proverbs 16:23-24, the heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Teach your mouth. Add learning to your lips. Let your words be as sweet as honeycomb, and let them bring health to your bones. Proverbs 17:27-28. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of calm spirit. But even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he's considered perceptive. So if you're not very smart, you'll look way smarter if you don't open your mouth. That's what he's saying. If you're not smart enough to know what you're talking about, just keep your mouth shut and people will think that you're just listening. They'll think that you're learning and you know what's going on here. Proverbs 18:6-8. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is destruction, and his lips are a snare to his soul. The words of a talebearer are like hasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost parts of the body. And then down in verse 21, it says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. If you love life, you will eat the fruit of life, and that is what you will speak. If you love death, then you will eat hatred and bad things, and you will speak that. Proverbs 25:15. By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone. So what he's trying to say there is if you are kind and you keep at it and you're persistent, then you will break people down. You'll have strength just by speaking the right way. That gives power to your words. That's why it says breaks a bone. Shows you how much power your words can have. Proverbs 27:2, let another man praise you and don't let your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. So that just says, don't be bragging about yourself, right? Let somebody else say how good you are. Nobody wants to hear it from you. Proverbs 31:26, she opens her mouth with wisdom and on her tongue is the law of kindness. So you women, this is what we need to be striving for. When you open your mouth, you want to sound wise. Let the law of kindness be on your lips. The law of kindness doesn't just mean say kind things. It means that you are bound to saying the kind things. Let yourself be bound to saying only kind things. This is hard, right? This is hard. We know this. That is why it says no man can bridle the tongue, because we're never going to accomplish this fully. But it is definitely something for us to all strive for and practice until we die, right? Some of us, it'll take more practice than others. I am included in that. So that is all of this lesson today. Follow me on social media. I'm going to be posting a lot of these verses. So if you don't subscribe to the Substack and you want to see written verses, then they'll be on my social media pages. If you do want to subscribe to Substack, it is $6 a month, $60 a year, and you can get these written lessons emailed to you each week so that you can follow along, or you can print them out and you can study them by yourself or with groups. And this is a good study material, so you'll have it there for you. You can also get on Substack for free and subscribe for free, and you can read the blog posts that go along with this, or you can go to livethroughjesus.com, get the blog post there, and then there's all my links are there. So these are all your options. That's all we have today. I will see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.